Hello, everyone, and welcome to Behold, the podcast where we turn our all-seeing eye to the world of comic book adaptations and try to sort the super from the substandard. Who's we? Well, I'm your host, Andrew, and as usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Mick.
Hello, the Mick with a mouth.
You certainly are.
Which, to be fair, is a basic qualification for podcasting, really.
Yeah, it would be pretty dumb if someone tried to make a mic where, like, his whole thing is talking and then they just sewed your mouth shut.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awful. That'd be terrible. Let's not do that. I want to ask your opinion on something, which doesn't happen often, apart from obviously every episode when we need to discuss the thing.
Yeah, but apart from that, is it time to head over to Mick's Merch Corner?
It's Mick's Merch Corner. This is, without a doubt, I think, the worst researched bit of merch I've ever purchased. Imagine, if you will, that you are the world's greatest detective.
Well, hold on a sec. Imagine. What makes you think I'm not?
Because I am, clearly.
He's got me there. He does have the official Batman-themed...
Right. So, in order to keep yourself in prime condition for all that skulking about in the shadows and running along rooftops and swinging through the air, you like to go running. While you're running, you like to stay hydrated. You like to stay hydrated. So you buy yourself a water bottle, all right? You go running, obviously, as Batman. It's got the logo. I did purchase it with my Bat credit card, obviously, right?
Of course.
But here's the flaw, right? Not only does it say Batman, which is fine, but it's made by Wayne Tech.
Well, that's... maybe it's some kind of like elaborate double bluff. I mean, because surely, if Bruce Wayne was Batman, world's greatest detective, he wouldn't go running with a Wayne Tech Batman-branded water bottle. So the fact that he has one means he can't possibly be Batman.
Yeah, could be that. Well, yeah, it's... Hi, I'm Batman, and Wayne Tech is my favourite shop on the Citadel. There. How was that for meta?
Right. I mean, ideally we would have gone from, like, Batman to Mass Effect to something Deadpool-related to segue it back.
Well, yeah, but... I went meta. Which is how I link it back to Deadpool.
There we go. It's a Deadpool 2 episode.
There you go. Deadpool 2. Or is it Domino 1?
I don't know. I'll have to wait till Match of the Day comes on. So, yep, today we are talking about the film Deadpool 2, which came out in 2018, directed by David Leitch, who is one of the guys who killed John Wick's dog, and written by Rhett Reese, Paul Wernick, and Ryan Reynolds. Rhett Reese sounds like Scooby-Doo saying something.
Rhett Reese.
Like wet fleece, maybe?
Rhett Reese? Is that what you got on the malls today?
Yes. Yes, listeners, just to explain how some of this episode might go, I was out walking on the moors until about, like, 40 minutes ago.
Yes.
Anyway, Deadpool 2 even, is based on the Marvel Comics character created by Fabian Nicieza and Rob Liefeld.
Yes.
And, but what about Once in a Blue Moons? Make a Deadpool as a character you're actually familiar with.
I am familiar with the regenerating degenerate. I read loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of Deadpool. Mainly spurred on by the 2016 film to which this is a sequel. But also by the fact that my grandchildren call me Grandpool.
I see. So you need to understand the hip cool references.
Exactly.
So, wow, this is finally like the one time that a comic book film has actually convinced someone to start getting into comics.
Yeah, that it usually convinces people away from comics, does a comic book movie. I vowed never to read a Blue Beetle comic, I tell you.
Yeah, to be fair, I think what's helped you is you haven't gone down the usual route of watching a comic book movie and then finding a friend who's into comics and saying, well, I really liked that, I want to get into this character, what should I start with?
Yes.
And then getting recommended, like, 20 years worth of X-Men comics that you need to read first before you can get an understanding for X-Force. Then you need to read all of X-Force to get to the introduction of Deadpool, and then you can start reading Deadpool.
Yeah, I just leapt straight in there. Actually, I think my first thing that I did was the I bought the Marvel. They used to do it once a year. They do 12 issues dedicated to a character, and they'd be reprinted. Sort of.
Oh yeah, not like a Marvel omnibus, but sort of. Hey, if you want to get into this character, here's like 12 stories as a sort of taster menu.
Yeah, True Believers, I think they're called.
That sounds like something.
Yeah, so the first one I got was The Women of Marvel, and that's how I got introduced to people like as diverse as Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, and of course, Princess Leia.
Who is still pretty marvellous.
And then I got the Deadpool one. And the thing about these True Believers things is that they retail for £1 a piece. So for £12, you can get the full set and it's fine. But interestingly enough, one of the issues in the Deadpool True Believers is a reprint of that fantastically told story in 1991's The New Mutants, is it?
Yes, sorry everyone, I missed out the part. You've got to read all of X-Men so that you can read all of New Mutants, which then leads into X-Force, and then you can read the first issue of Deadpool.
Yeah, so the first appearance of Deadpool is in that 1991 New Mutants.
Yeah, so, and then about 5 years after that, you get the first appearance of Deadpool's feet when Rob Liefeld stops drawing it.
I always figured that's why he made him a regenerating character, so that if anybody criticised the feet, you could just say, oh, he had his legs blown off in an off-page incident. And then
he's just growing his feet back.
So, but the last time I looked up the True Believers online, the reprint of the first appearance of Deadpool was going for £20.
Ooh.
Potentially, I've made my money back.
God, comics collecting is just such a weird market.
It is, isn't it? But yeah, so it covered... It had that issue. It had the wedding issue that had, at the time, the world record for the most comic book characters on a single cover, where I believe he marries Lady Death.
That's right, he had a weird vampire lady girlfriend. Shikla, maybe?
Could be.
If you know the name of Deadpool's vampire wife, answers on a postcard.
I think he also married Death as well.
Yeah, he definitely had a thing with Death, because there was a whole thing with like him and Thanos at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, so. So yeah, we love Deadpool.
We do indeed. Actually, I've ever been quite curious, Mick. Like, how does he rank in terms of like your favourite characters?
Oh, well, I would say he's probably right up there. I mean, if you let's see, He's up there with Judge Dredd, Batman, Spidey, sometimes.
What when he's not an unborn baby?
That's definitely in my top five, eh?
What when he's not an unborn baby?
Yeah, he's definitely in my top five. I think that's fair to say.
Nice, yeah, I'm a big Deadpool fan as well. I would say maybe more top 20, but that's probably just because I know a lot of comic characters.
Yeah, you have a wider range. I'm more of a connoisseur.
Slash person who actually has a life.
Yeah, that too.
Anyway, so yeah, we like Deadpool, we like the comics. We also like the first film.
We did. We're worried about the third film.
It's a toughie. Cause it's
I'm worried about a Disney R-rated movie.
But it's also, it's Deadpool, a good thing that we like.
Yes.
But also Fox X-Men, a thing that is sometimes good, but a lot of the time is very bad.
Yes. But I think it's fair to say that Hugh Jackman is universally a redeeming feature of the Fox X-Men.
Yeah, and to be fair, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine in an actual Wolverine costume, I'm very excited for.
Yes.
Like, it's finally, after about, like, 7 or 20 Fox X-Men movies, with them teasing, ooh, they're all going to be in proper costumes next time, and then the next film comes around, it's like, haha, surprise, no, it's just more black leather.
Oh, by the way, on BBC Sounds, there's a compilation of the movies that made me, by Ali somebody, where he interviews movie stars about the movies that they've appeared in. And in one episode, he asks George Clooney and Julia Roberts about things they've taken from sets. George Clooney claims he stole the nipples from the bat suit and uses them as coat hooks in his house.
Excellent. And to be fair, he could. They are very purse.
Oh, yeah. Just a little aside there.
Yeah, and to be fair, Deadpool would want us to talk about Batman's nipples.
He would. Possibly while stroking them.
Anyway, as much as I hate to get us back on track, should I do a plot synopsis?
Yeah, do that thing.
Okay, so once again, spoilers ahead. So, 2 years after the first film, Wade Wilson, aka Deadpool, aka Ryan Reynolds, has continued his life as a mercenary, taking out criminals across the world. However, one of his targets escapes and tracks Wade back to his apartment. In the ensuing fight, Wade's girlfriend Vanessa, Marina Baccarin, is shot and killed. Oh no! Leaving Wade with nothing but a lead skee ball token as a reminder of their first date, a point that I'm sure won't come back up again in the synopsis. So, Deadpool falls into a deep depression and makes several attempts to kill himself, all failing due to his healing factor. Hoping to snap him out of it, Colossus, played by Stefan Kapicic, invites Deadpool to join the X-Men as a trainee, along with Negasonic Teenage Warhead, played by Brianna Hildebrand, and her girlfriend Yukio, played by Shioli Kutsuna. For his first mission, Deadpool and the X-Men travel to the Essex Orphanage for Mutant Children, where police are in a standoff with a pyrokinetic Russell Collins, played by Julian Dennison. Deadpool is able to subdue Russell, but in the process discovers that the staff at the orphanage have been abusing him. So Deadpool starts shooting at them, causing him to also be arrested. In prison, Russell tries to bond with Wade, but he rebuffs him. They're also both forced to wear power-dampening collars, which causes Wade's cancer to slowly start killing him. Wade hopes to die in peace, but is forced back into action when Cable, Josh Brolin, a cyborg soldier from the future, travels back to kill Russell to save his family from Russell's future reign of terror. Deadpool fights Cable and saves Russell, but falls off a cliff in the process, allowing Cable to escape. Cable also takes the skee-ball token as a memento. And again, that's definitely the only reason we keep mentioning the skee-ball token. So, realizing that Cable will try and kill Russell again during a prisoner transfer, Deadpool organizes a crack squad of elite mercenaries called the X-Force, consisting of Domino, played by Zazie Beetz, who can manipulate luck in her favor, Bedlam, Terry Crews, who can control electricity, Shatterstar, played by Lewis Tan, an alien who's...
It hurts. When you shatter stuff.
Yep, thank you for the joke. Every single time. He's an alien who's better than you at everything. There's also Zeitgeist, played by Bill Skarsgård, who spits acidic vomit. The Invisible Vanisher, played by Brad Pitt. And Peter, played by Rob Delaney, a man with a mustache. So, I realise that was a lot of characters, but it's important to keep them all in your head because, you know, obviously Deadpool is from X-Force. X-Force is very important to this film. So X-Force jump out of a helicopter and everyone dies almost immediately except for Deadpool and Domino. Who make it to the prison convoy just as Cable attacks. They fend off Cable, but the convoy crashes and Russell escapes with the unstoppably strong Juggernaut, who is also played by Ryan Reynolds. But, I mean, it's CGI. Because Ryan Reynolds is not a bulky man.
No.
Except in... Have you ever seen the Amityville horror film he's in?
No.
It's weirdly muscular in that. Like, it looks like someone has CGI'd his head onto Chris Evans' body as Captain America. I've forgotten where I was up to in the synopsis.
Juggernaut.
Yeah, Juggernaut. So he escapes with Russell and also tears Deadpool in half. So while growing his legs back, Deadpool is approached by Cable, who offers to work with him to stop Russell and Juggernaut from burning down the orphanage. Deadpool agrees, in exchange for a chance to talk Russell down without killing him. Deadpool, Cable, Domino, and taxi driver Dopinder, led by Karen Soni, travel to the orphanage and struggle against the Juggernauts until Colossus, Negasonic, and Yukio arrive to help. Deadpool stops Russell, but struggles to get through to him. As a last-ditch effort, he puts on a dampener collar and tells Russell that if he wants to kill the orphanage's headmaster, played by Eddie Marzin, he'll have to kill him first. However, Cable decides that the plan isn't working and tries to shoot Russell. Deadpool dies in front of the bullet and, without his healing factor, is fatally wounded. Oh no, again! Regretting his actions and seeing that Deadpool's death has reformed Russell, Cable uses the last charge of his time travel device to go back a few minutes and slip the lead skee ball token into Deadpool's costume so that it will block the bullet when he shoots him. See, it was actually foreshadowing the whole time.
In huge big dollops.
Now bonded as a family, the group leave, allowing the headmaster to be run over by a bloodthirsty Dopinder. Then, in a mid-credits scene, Negasonic and Yukio fix Cable's time slider, allowing Wade to go back, save Vanessa, kill the X-Men Origins version of Deadpool, and most importantly, kill the actor Ryan Reynolds before he can star in Green Lantern. And do you want to know the horrifying plot twist?
Go on.
At some point, we're going to have to cover X-Men Origins Wolverine and Green Lantern. because we live in the timeline where they do exist.
I rewatched Green Lantern not so long ago.
But we don't have an episode planned, Mick. Why would you do that?
Well, I had to sort of think. It's one of those things where I was seeing if there was a Mandela effect in operation. You know, one of those things where everybody's convinced everybody else that it's a really bad movie. But what if it isn't?
Oh, okay. Yeah, just like, is it actually that bad? Or?
And to be fair, you know, I've watched Madam Web since. Green Lantern's actually all right.
I think maybe it's a case of, it's not that Green Lantern isn't as bad as everyone says it is. It's just that the bar for what like an actual bad comic book movie has been lowered so much by now.
Yeah, this is it. So, yeah, I seem to remember it was all right. It wasn't Madam Web levels of there.
Yeah, I think the main things I remember that are bad is it like the suits is quite weird because it's all CGI.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that he fights Parallax at the end and he's just a big cloud of poo.
Yeah. It's flawed. But it's watchable.
Well, that's that covered, so I guess now it's time for us to rank Green Lantern on our list of comic book movies.
Just above Madam Web.
I joke, but part of me is tempted to just put it on the list now and then I don't have to watch it again.
Don't get us out of X-Men Origins Wolverine, does it?
God, no, it doesn't. A movie so full of explosions and they're all bad.
But it's another X-Men movie for me to watch and instantly forget.
That's true. You are blessed with the ability to... Maybe that's your mutant power. Is just
that's
not
my mutant power. Something. My mutant power is to block my knowledge of mutants from my head. That'd make me a terrible version of Magneto, wouldn't it? I've recruited every mutant to my cause. What did I do? What? Who are you lot? Go away!
I mean, is that just not a regular Magneto after he's been sent to the care home?
So, question for you. With Deadpool 3, or Deadpool and Wolverine as it's more commonly being called, that sees Deadpool enter the MCU continuity, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
How do they explain Cable becoming Thanos?
I think they explain it by Deadpool turns to camera and says that they're the same actor. I mean, that is one of the beautiful things with Deadpool, is you don't have to worry about things like that. But yeah, after doing episodes on Echo and Madam Web, God, this was a nice change of pace.
Wasn't it, though? It was just so nice. I remember going to see this in the cinema, because it was the first film I went to see in 4DX. And that Japanese bathhouse scene, where he's just slicing through them all, that was my introduction to the 4DX special effects. With stuff getting spurted in your face. Usually it's designed for when people are at sea and there's sea sprays. No, mine was blood spatter.
Right. Did you get some of the bad guy's blood in your eye and then you had to wash it out and then wiped it with a towel, but it turns out it was actually one of like the cloths of the guy?
No, it wasn't quite that realistic, but.
Okay, so there wasn't a point where, like, you got thrown into a helicopter's whirling blades or force-fed through a wood chipper?
No.
I don't know why you bothered with this 4DX.
I mean, I don't think that happened.
Unless it did, and then they just changed the timeline.
Could be. But yes, it's marvellous. It's one of those films where you think the first one was so good, so funny and irreverent, that the second one can't possibly live up to it. But I think it did, and I think it did it because all the notes that worked so well in the first one, like Blind Al, Dapinda, were there again.
Oh, also, I should mention that Blind Al is played by Leslie Uggams. And then I think that covers every major character in the Deadpool films.
Yes. So, it would have been nice to see more of Vanessa. But, you know, that was the plot. So, you know.
Yeah, because I guess that's probably the big sticking point for some people with this film, is Vanessa does technically get fridged where they kill her off for the sake of the sequel plots. But I think it's one of those things where, like, the problem with fridging is more of as an overall trend. Like, it's the fact that it's always happening to women for male characters. But in this specific example, it actually works really well.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, like, it's not like she dies and then it's almost like, you know, the Austin Powers turn to camera, well, I guess I'm single again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Deadpool being sad about her death is literally the plot of the film.
Yeah, it's the motivation behind him doing what he does. And to be fair, it's a fridge where the door keeps getting left open anyway.
Yeah, it also helps a lot that they undo it at the end of the film, yes.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I love the whole thing of auditioning the team, the X-Force team, and the fact that they go into so much depth about the characters, given how long they last as X-Force.
Yeah. What I love about that as well is that they get a bunch of actors who are, like, recognisable, but they're not, like, it's not like they've got George Clooney in to play Shatterstar, so you know, oh no, he's only going to be in it for a scene because there's no way they can afford to have George Clooney in this whole film.
Yeah.
So it works even better when they're just abruptly killed off.
The fact that you don't even find out about Brad Pitt until the very end of his existence is just superb.
It's great, because it makes, like, a great double joke. Because at first you think the thing is that the Vanisher just isn't there.
Yeah.
That they've just, like, thrown an empty parachute off the plane. And then he is, and it's Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Excellent. But I think that's the beauty of the Deadpool movies, is that there's enough different gags in there that if that gag doesn't land for you personally, it doesn't matter, because there'll be another one in a minute or two. I love the whole sequence where he's talking to Domino about how luck isn't a superpower.
Yeah, and explain how it's... Well, it's not very cinematic, is it? Like, as a car swerves and crashes into a gas station, which explodes and then flips the car, and then she uses that as a ramp to, like, jump in and then shoots the hatch off and punches a guy.
Yeah, it's all brilliant. That chase sequence is superb.
And just in general, Zazie Beetz is great, isn't she?
Yeah. And it was nice to see her get to do something, whereas in Joker, she doesn't really.
Oh yeah, she's the not love interest woman.
She's the victim of his stalking, is what she is.
Yeah, I should watch Joker at some. Oh God, we have to do a Joker episode at some point, don't we?
Have you not seen it?
I've not. I don't care about the Joker film. If I want to watch Joker, I'll just watch Kings of Comedy, the Martin Scorsese film.
So, yeah, so I think, because I've read on the back of Deadpool 2, I read a few Domino comics as well. And it's a really good character. It'd be nice to see Domino get a solo movie.
Yeah.
You, Tim Feige.
I'm hoping she stays around, because if Deadpool's going to be part of the MCU, in theory, they've still got access to those characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's fun, because she's basically like cool super spy, and then also like really fun luck stuff. Like, I remember there's one comic. Normally, I don't remember like what the actual issue is, but it's got like a Domino backup story. And it's really cool, because she basically like sneaks into some bad guy's base, and then like as she's sneaking in, like one of her bullets falls out of like a pouch, and then she kind of goes through, kind of gets in all these fights, and then at the end is like in a standoff with the main villain, and she's holding her gun out. It's like, oh no, she's out of bullets. And then that one bullet from the start like drops out of a vent, lands in her gun, and she shoots him.
Brilliant. Well, I like it, because it must be a joy for a writer. Because all those films where they have some convenient contrivance, it actually makes sense. The fans can't turn around and go, oh, how lucky was it that there happened to be a ... there. That was convenient, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think it works because you can go like really outlandish with it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the bit where she just jumps out the corner and lands in a giant inflatable panda.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Actually, my favourite bit with the luck powers is when she saves all the orphans and just goes, God, I'm going to need a bus to get you lot out of here. And then Juggernaut throws a bus through one of the walls.
Yeah. It's great. I love the title sequence. I like the way what they did in the first one, but makes it more Bondy.
It's more very like Bondy, Bundle. Yes.
Yeah. It's almost like a little script in itself, railing against the killing of Vanessa.
It is, yeah. Like I did that. That's what I was referencing before. With just the direct, it's directed by one of the guys who killed John Wick's dog.
Yeah.
And written by the real villains.
Yeah. So, was there anything I didn't like in Deadpool 2? I found it. It felt a bit too long.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of sequel bloat, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the kid, Julian Dennison, he was awesome in
Hunt for the Wilder People.
That's the one.
Yes, living with that. Yeah. We didn't choose the Skook's life. Skook's life chose us.
Yeah, he was great in that. And the only other thing I've then seen him in is Deadpool 2, and he was awesome in that.
Yeah,
Because actually,
I feel like he's been in something else, but I can't remember what.
Because actually, for me, he kind of breaks another sort of common superhero movie trope in that he's a kid with powers who's actually a bit on the stout side.
Yeah, actually, that's maybe my one complaint. Is that kind of some things I've seen online have made a very good point that because he's got that whole issue of being like an overweight superhero, that actually instead of the Juggernaut, it would have made a lot more sense if like the big villain kept in the icebox is the Blob.
Yeah.
And then that's a thing they can like bond over.
Yeah. The thought of Juggernaut bonding with someone.
Yeah, because yeah, that's maybe if I am critiquing this, it is just like Juggernaut shows up and then Russell's like, do you want to help me? And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, because that's the kind of guy Juggernaut is, isn't it?
Yeah, but then it's also like, what's to stop him just walking off and doing something else?
Exactly. But hey, the death scene, the death speech.
Yeah, that's maybe for me the bit that goes on too long the most.
But it did remind me of all those movies you see where someone's so obviously doing an Oscar grab during their death scene.
Yes.
He does it perfectly, delivers it perfectly. There's just enough pathos and remembering something and... Oh, I've not quite
done yet. I do like the joke of someone like doing their big dramatic death speech and then just being like, right, I'm ready to die now. Oh, no, wait, I'm not dead yet. Oh, no.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So, all in all, a damn good romp.
Indeed. Because it's a lot of fun. And it's like, it's a good action film as well.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned multiple times, David Leitch was involved with John Wick. And you can certainly see a lot of that in like the action sequences.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, Deadpool and Wolverine is technically Deadpool 3, Deadpool 4. Have you seen Detective Pikachu?
Oh, that's right. He did get turned into a Pikachu in that one film. I mean, by that logic, isn't basically every single Ryan Reynolds film post Deadpool 1 just a Deadpool sequel now? Because he is just Deadpool in every film.
Yes. There was that one on a train. Oh no, that's a Brad Pitt one, isn't it?
Yeah, Bullet Train is Brad Pitt.
And Ryan
Reynolds was in hit Netflix film Red Notice with The Rock.
Right, he was in Free Guy.
Again.
Which I guess would be the version Deadpool. Of Deadpool from the video game. voices. I think that was
voices. That was pre Deadpool.
I mean, that'd be weird if he was Deadpool in that.
I mean, to be fair, he is. That is actually one of his more Deadpool-y roles.
It is.
Because he is playing a guy who has, like, two inner monologues just like Deadpool has sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Is it time to put it on the list?
I think it could very well be time to put it on the list. So, going through... You know, let's go through the top 15, because then we'll cover Deadpool 1. So, History of Violence at number 1, Road to Perdition at number 2, Superman at number 3, Hellboy at number 4, Ghost World at number 5, Dread at number 6, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 at number 7, The Suicide Squad at 8, Black Widow at 9, Batman at 10, the 1989 film, Sin City at 11, and Deadpool at 12.
I think this is one of those rare cases where the sequel was better than the first film.
Yes, definitely Deadpool 2 over Deadpool 1. I mean, I think as well with Deadpool 1, just they were held back a bit by like just the budget they had.
Yeah.
And this one is a lot more fully realised.
Yeah. I think it's more rewatchable than Dread. Dread's great to watch once now and again. But it's not like a movie where if you've had a bad day, you're going to put it on and go, ah, this'll make me feel better.
Yeah, I think they're very similar. Because, to be fair, Dread kind of is that film for me.
That says a lot more about your psyche than...
It does. Also, where I think we're going to run into problems is I like Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and The Suicide Squad better than Deadpool 2.
You see, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I'll grant you.
But yes.
As you know, my feelings on The Suicide Squad is that it's slightly less pants than Suicide Squad.
That is well documented and quite possibly the rift that will one day destroy the show.
Could we possibly put Deadpool 2 between the two of them?
I mean, yeah, go as a compromise.
That's what I'm thinking.
Put it in between. So, Deadpool 2 is our new number 8, even though in my heart of hearts it's our new number 10. Oh, no, number 9. Because then the Suicide Squad would still be 8, so then that would be 9 underneath it. And then Black
Widow. You want me to get Cable to organise it so we can go back and have that discussion again?
Yes, please.
Right. Shall I try and get some more odd merchandise and we can make Mixed Merchandise Corner a semi-regular feature?
Yes, within reason.
I wonder if I can find my Wonder Woman toast cutter.
Okay, that's... To be honest, the word Wonder Woman had me somewhat anxious. But that's all right. That's the kind of fun chat we can have.
Was it Wonder Woman? I'm sure it was Wonder Woman. I had a Batman one. A Batman egg cup. And it came with a stencil that you could cut Batman soldiers out of your toes.
I mean, that's far too much work, but also lovely.
Didn't work. It never got through the bread. It was so cheap and nasty. But
also, I mean, surely that would need to be a very thin Batman to fit in an egg.
Yes. Yes, it was. But, of course, what you could do is you could then put on your best Vincent Price voice and pretend it was an episode from the 66 TV series.
I was just about to ask, is that why Vincent Price quit his criminal career? Because he couldn't find a Batman thin enough.
Oh. Right, I'll see what I can do.
Excellent. Well, listeners, look out for Mixed Merch Corner in an episode sometime in the future.
Or the past. you know, the cable thing.
Yeah, maybe. Oh my god, what if, right, like, we record this episode and then we record another episode, but then I release that one first, and on that one we have Mixed Merch Corner with just like no reference to it being a new thing.
Yes.
I mean, I won't, but I can dream. Anyway, I think that's... I think that's about it from us. If you want to listen to more, you can find all our episodes on the feed or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you subscribe to the show, you'll make sure you never miss an episode. I mean, especially because I very often forget to put them out on... Like, I'll share them
on Facebook. Any kind of social media platform.
Sometimes I will share them on my Facebook and then Nick shares them on his Facebook.
Which means all 24 of our friends get them. And I don't even know 23 of mine.
Oh, it's true, I have no friends. Anyway, if you do want to get in touch and, I don't know, say you'll be my friend. God, this has turned really sad. Our email is beholdpod@gmail.com. And if you're a fan, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review on your podcast app of choice or recommended us to a friend. It's the best way for us to grow as a show and reach new listeners. So,
because sharing on social media is a washout. It really is.
I think our Twitter account's still technically active. I don't know if I know the password anymore.
We should really utilise that now that it's X, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think that is on brand for us to get really into that social media platform as it's collapsing.
Yes. We should really set up a Threads account as well, really.
Oh, Threads. You infuriate me so much, Threads. Just make it part of Instagram. Well, don't make me need to go get a separate app just to read messages I don't care about. Don't let me do the show tired again, Mick. Until next time, I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
So long, and thanks for listening.